Welcome to Channels, the Next Flow podcast. I'm Rob Lalonde. So you might have noticed, if you've seen previous podcasts, that we've rebranded the podcast now to Channels, the Next Flow podcast, to align with our new format that we're working with our Next Flow community advocate team. And they've released this new format called Channels, as I said. The advocates, or as we affectionately call them, the avocados, they're going to be doing a news and views episode with Phil, Chris, and Marcel discussing the hottest topics in the Next Flow world. And I'm going to continue with the segments that I do, which are more interview types of segments, and it'll be intermingled with their episodes, where I interview some of the world's leading bioinformaticians and data scientists discussing advancements at the intersection of biology and informatics. So let's jump in. Our guest today is Robert Petit from the Wyoming Public Health Laboratory. Robert has a master's in bioinformatics from Georgia Institute of Technology. He's also got a PhD from Emory University, where he worked with developing pipelines for bacterial pathogens such as Staphylococcus aureus. And he's developed a number of open source bioinformatics tools. He's an active member in the bioinformatics community, and we've worked with him a lot in the past. He's working with the Bioconda team. He's working with the NF Core team. And he's currently, as I said, working with the Wyoming Public Health Laboratory. So a hearty welcome to you, Robert. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you, Rob. I will agree with you. It's always great to catch up with you and chat with you. So
yeah.
Happy to be here and excited.
Yeah, we last met in Barcelona at the Next Flow Summit, and you did a talk on Bactopia that was really well received. And I thought, wow, you'd be great to have on the podcast and interview. So here we are just a couple months later, and you've once again got one of your awesome shirts on to give people something to look at other than my mug. So why don't we start with telling us what happens at Wyoming Public Health Laboratory and what your role is there?
Yeah, so Wyoming Public Health Laboratory, our main goal is, you know, keeping the citizens of Wyoming healthy. And so I'm on the microbial side in the laboratory. And what we do is a lot of testing that can be sexually transmitted diseases, foodborne outbreaks, some viral outbreak. It could be schools, events, social events, family gatherings, long-term care facilities, hospitals, all sorts of things. But part of our role is to take these tests and pass the results to the state epidemiologist, and then they decide to follow up on interviews. And I think we've all, you know, COVID happened and a lot of things changed. At Wyoming Public Health Laboratory, I think prior to COVID, we maybe had a MiSeq and a single MinION sequencer. And with COVID, it really brought to the forefront genomic surveillance. Can we, you know, track these genomes, like the pangolin lineages, the variants? And it brought a lot of money to the public health field. And through this, the Wyoming Public Health Laboratory started building up their infrastructure. And so we now have a lot of sequencers to keep up with all these genomes that are coming in. And it was very much COVID focused, but, you know, they built the infrastructure and they had a need for a bioinformatician. So that we can generate the sequences, but we need somebody to help us maintain and actually do something with the sequences. And that's where I came in, and they had a position open. I was like, let's try it. Let's see what happens and let's go from there. So my main role right now is to help the sequencing group manage their data. And this may mean incorporating a number of pipelines. What do we ask? It's a lot of data management, honestly. Like, where is the data going and how do we know where it's at? And how do we pass the results? And so I work closely with the sequencing lab, state epidemiologists. We also work very closely with the vet lab here in Wyoming. It's a very rural state, so there's a lot of human animal interactions that occur. And so we work closely with them, and we work closely with the agricultural lab as well. One thing I didn't really see coming into this is the education that was going to be needed. The genomics brings in a different sort of data that our IT department wasn't accustomed to. And so there's been a lot of educating that you know, generating terabytes of data, genomic data, is not that much data when it comes to actual genomic data, where you have some groups generating petabytes. And so there's been a lot of education on what is genomic sequencing, what are we doing with the data, and how are we using it for the public health well-being of the citizens of Wyoming. And we also do a lot of training, which is kind of nice. So we recently had scientists from Oman and Kenya here in little Cheyenne, Wyoming, receiving lab and bioinformatic training, which is always fun.
That had to be an awesome change of scenery for people.
Yeah.
We've definitely seen public health lab testing, you know, become much more prominent in our business over the last, 2 years, let's say. COVID, obviously the driver for that. And it's driven a lot of money into the system, I think, as well, to allow people to build out solutions. And I think the beauty of it is, too, that as this money's come into the system and people have put infrastructure in place to do better genomic surveillance, now they can use it for all the other things too, because the world isn't just COVID, as we know, right? It could be bacterial,
totally.
It could be RSVs, yeah. A big outbreak right now, and you know they can monitor that, flu, everything. So I think this infrastructure is going to have much broader benefits, and the COVID investment is going to have broader benefits for the labs and the systems.
Yes, we're definitely investigating what's next.
Like, yeah,
how do we use this? Continue to use this genomic surveillance.
Cool. Well, thanks for that introduction on what you're doing in Wyoming. I want to talk more about Wyoming when we get to the end, at a social level. But mm-hmm. Tell me about how you got into NextFlow. I know you're doing a lot of NextFlow now with Backtopia and other things. Tell us about that background and how you got there.
It is it has a bit of a history. So I think in 2010-ish, I had recently joined master's program, and I was honestly on my way out of bioinformatics because it's a small cohort. We had to join a lab and I wasn't able to get a lab. And I was like, I'm going to go back to ecology stuff, my previous background, field ecology. And I got lucky and got hooked up with a guy named Tim Reed over at Emory University. And he had this grand goal of, I want to analyze all the Staphylococcus aureus genomes and the database. The database being the sequence read archive. And the grand goal at that time seemed like a lot. There was 700 genomes. And in 2010, that's a lot. 2022, probably not so much. We can knock that out really quickly. But so we started developing this pipeline to analyze these genomes, and it went through a number of rewrites. It's 2010, so it's very web app centric at that point. So we had a PHP pipeline version, and they were like, that's a lot of, asking people to upload fast queues to get analyzed. So that didn't last very long. Then it got rewritten in Perl or Bash at some point, and then Python. But we got awarded a AWS cloud credits for research small grant. And we're like, okay, let's try to analyze all these genomes. This is probably like 2013 or 2014 at that point. I think there's like thousands of genomes, Staph aureus genomes now. So it's growing, but okay, we're going to try this on AWS. And we tried it with something called Star Cluster at that point, which would allow you to basically use AWS to run a SunGrid engine. And it worked, but we had issues with some of the instances not being stopped. And so it kind of, when instances don't stop on any cloud infrastructure, that's money that's being spent. And so it's one of those where we have this pipeline, it worked, but also we needed to expand. Like, we wanted to run it on different infrastructures. And so I started looking into workflow managers at that point. I was using one, I think, called Rufus, which was the Python-based one. And it didn't have that kind of support to go between Slurm or AWS or my laptop, something like that. And 2015, 16-ish, I was like, all right, I need to find a workflow manager that supports, everything I need. And I I tried some of the big ones. I think Apache Airflow in Luigi. I was like, oh, those are kind of cool. But also, if I run into a problem, there's not many bioinformaticians using these. So they're going to be like, that's cool, but we can't really help you because we don't have any idea what you're trying to do. And so at that point, there was SnakeMake and NextFlow, which were very bioinformatic kind of centric at that point. And so I sat down and I wrote a pipeline in each one. It's just a small Illumina pipeline, basically taken part of what we had written for this previous pipeline. And after writing that, NextFlow just clicked with me, and the rest is history. Like, I like how NextFlow kind of reacts to things. Like, I have a bunch of ways to get out of stuff and checks and all that. And I most of the time want to be able to do the type of stuff that NextFlow allows me to do. And the being able to switch between systems is just kind of like the cherry on top. I very easily switch in between systems is super nice. But also just the scalability of it.
Right. How do you use NextFlow at Wyoming? What kinds of pipelines are you running? What are you doing there with NextFlow? Where are you running stuff too?
We definitely have a NextFlow bias because I'm there. But we also have a bias against reinventing the wheel. So if there's workflows out there that already exist, we make heavy use of them. And so right now, through post-COVID, it's kind of that what are we going to do with the data type of deal? What other pathogens are we going to do surveillance on? Or one big one is going to be wastewater sequencing. So take the public wastewater, sequence it metagenomically, and see what's in there. Can you use that to kind of get an idea of the health of the current, you know, public? Are we seeing large amounts of viral shredding in the sequences to kind of indicate that there's a ongoing outbreak or something? And so we're currently testing. We're a big fan of NF Core because I know if I use the NF Core pipeline, it's going to work. There will be some small tweaks we have to make, but it'll be like system specific tweaks. Nothing dramatic.
Which pipelines at NF Core are you using?
Currently, we're testing out the tax profiler one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. For wastewater sequencing. With great success so far. There's a learning curve for us trying to figure out how do we, you know, put our databases, because some of those databases can get quite large for the metagenomics. I think one is like 400 plus gigs, and trying to manage where that goes. So we're testing the tax profiler one. We're also testing the MAG one, just because metagenomic might as well. We're very, again, a state where that hasn't been sampled very much. So we may have some unique organisms here in Wyoming that's where the metagenomic simple genomes, the MAG pipeline will, you know, maybe help us find some stuff that we can contribute to the public databases. Viral recon, it's hard to avoid viral recon when most of what we do is kind of COVID, ongoing COVID surveillance. So having a robust pipeline like that really helps out a lot. We're doing this all on with NextFlow on Azure, using Azure Batch, and so far it's working quite well. It's always quite nice to expand and grow as needed. I should mention for bacterial stuff, we're using Bactopia, which is the pipeline that I've developed that pretty much follows all of NextFlow principles.
So Bactopia, tell us more about that pipeline. Obviously, it's near and dear to your heart, and I've certainly seen you speak about it. What's the history behind that one?
Oh, that's me and Tim Reed over at Emory University. One day we'll write a history kind of highlighting all those changes, because Bactopia stemmed from a pipeline called Staphopia, and that's kind of that pipeline we were writing that kind of got us into NextFlow. And Staphopia was specific to Staphylococcus aureus, and So we take this time, build this pipeline, and it becomes available. And people are like, that's cool, but I don't work with Steph. Can I use this for my bacteria? And so because we use NextFlows, like, I could picture how we would make these changes to make it bacterial agnostic. And so we worked on that, but we had a important use case. We were working on a study, Haemophilus influenzae was causing unusual septic arthritis in a group of patients in the where I was previously at. And it was one of those where we wanted to quickly analyze. And so we adapted the Staph opiate pipeline to H-flu. And then from there, we just took it and made it open to all bacteria. But it has quite the history. And I think it kind of shows the history of the last 10 years of bioinformatics, where we go from, you know, you're kind of doing your own thing on your own system, you know, having your own dependencies, and then the implementation of Conda and Docker and Singularity. So now we have these containerized, and then you got stuff like NextFlow coming out, but it makes it, you know, packages all quite nicely. So it was a rapid change kind of riding that over the last 10 years. But yeah, it's a complete all-in-one type of pipeline. Throw your bacterial sample in there and throw a bunch of tools at it and get a bunch of results. And then you as the expert on your bacterium decide which of those results are important to you. And so it includes more than 150 different bioinformatic tools right now.
Wow.
And yeah, I will say DSL2 completely changed the game for Bactopia. It was pretty remarkable how much easier it made things compared to DSL1.
Nice. So, you know, I talk to customers every day that are using NF Core pipelines, and you're obviously making heavy use of them as well. But Bactopia is part of NF Core. So maybe you can explain why that is, but how you're still interacting with the NF Core team with Bactopia and how you're actually sort of leveraging that tooling.
Yeah. So when I first started working on Bactopia, NF Core had just kind of begun. It was always kind of on my radar. And it's like, you know, as I'm writing Bactopia, can I write it in such a way that eventually maybe I can go into NF Core? And I think at DSL1, that probably would have been possible. And so one of the things that Bactopia doesn't do is I don't follow the one tool per process type of approach. There's some things, especially in smaller genomes, where it may take 5 minutes to assemble the genome and 10 seconds to just get some stats on it. And so I kind of merge those steps where you have a lot of small processes that don't take much time and into a single process. And that pretty much, it kind of violates the NF Core principles, which is not a bad thing. Or it's the NF Core principles, I think, are very good at creating very good pipelines. Like they're very robust, they work, and that's what we need, especially in public health, where we don't get to kind of sit on the data. It's one of those where we need to process the data and deliver results to our epidemiologists so they can decide if follow-up interviews are needed. And they can't wait around 6 months to determine if they need to investigate this foodborne outbreak from last summer. By writing Bactopia that is in such a way that it's NF Core compatible, it opened the door to allow me to contribute to NF Core. And again, the DSL2, I participated in a hackathon and got to learn about the modules repo and got to learn how the modules work. And that was a easy avenue to take what I'm doing with Bactopia, because there wasn't very many bacterial tools represented in the modules repo. And here I have Bacopia that's using a bunch of microbial tools. Let's start putting those into NFCore modules. And so every module that I have, other than those that group tools together, I submit them to NFCore. And so there's a lot of overlap there. And, you know, it's give and take. I got to learn a lot about PyTest, which is quite nice. So I got to learn about a lot about continuous integration. And I get to contribute a lot to NFCore, which I think it works great.
Yeah, that's great. We're seeing a lot of people take that approach. And obviously, people don't want to reinvent the wheel when it comes to pipelines. You're not going to go write a new RNA-seq pipeline on NextFlow, for instance. That just doesn't make sense anymore. But, you know, customers often have unique needs that aren't addressed by the standard pipelines, which is roughly 70-ish now, you know, they're development or released.
It's funny not to cut you off, but I remember like at some one point when I first started with modules, there's like 50 or 60, and I was like, oh, that's awesome. And the last time they did an update, there was like 600 or 700. I'm like, yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, so people are really starting to leverage those modules in their custom pipelines too, because at least maybe you're still building your own pipeline, but you're not reinventing the wheel on some of the tooling. Let some of the people that have come before you, you know, and leverage that.
Totally
fantastic. So what are your plans for Bacopia? I mean, work is never done, right? So you must have some plans of where you want to take this next.
The bane of bioinformatics, I guess, is work is never done. There's always something happening. I think, well, one nice thing is working with Wyoming Public Health Laboratory is there's kind of this shift of ongoing genomic surveillance. So in the past, I'd only done like reactive studies, like, hey, we collected all these samples, let's sequence them and do a study. But now it's, and so Bacopia was kind of geared that way. You've already sequenced all your genomes and process them and look at the results. But now with working in public health, like with the ongoing surveillance, we need a pipeline that does kind of ongoing surveillance. So I'm planning to kind of implement some bigger tools into the genomic surveillance. So stuff that requires bigger databases that you wouldn't really want to run on your laptop, but if you have the infrastructure, you can do this ongoing surveillance. It's very, you know, for some people, it's not a big deal, but for us, Bacopia was developed to process a single species at a time. You could process thousands of Staph aureus, but you couldn't mix it with E. coli, just because at runtime, it would import Staph data sets and then do everything. But with DSL2, I can start kind of, you know, picking up stuff, putting it here and moving the Legos a bit. And so planning to make it to where it works with any organism on any given run, because genomic surveillance, we're basically getting a bunch of different organisms that we want to process at a time. And always customizable reports. People love visualizations, and I think that's somewhere where Bacopia needs to improve. And as many tools as I can add, it's one of those where, again, DSL2 made it super easy. And it's there's a framework for it now. So adding as many tools as we can that we find useful.
And that'll be all done next week.
I'm pretty sure I'm going to be submitting a pull request to myself this evening.
That's great. So, Robert, you're not just a pretty shirt. We want to get to know you a little bit better, though. So let's jump into the rapid fire questions and get to know you a little bit better. We've heard about the business side of Robert Petit. So tell us a few things about Wyoming.
So I will tell you, I grew up in, you know, moving around on the East Coast of the U.S. And so I had never been to Wyoming. So I didn't know what to quite to expect when I got there. It is so windy. Really? Like when growing up on the East Coast, we'd get random hurricanes that would come through. But that's just like a normal day here in Wyoming where you get like tropical storm force winds. We had one last year, or actually earlier this year, measured 125 miles per hour or 200 kilometers per hour. That's just, oh, you know, hold your hat down or something. Try not to get blown away. But it's very beautiful. We have Yellowstone on the western side of Wyoming. Where I am, it's kind of a plateau region, so you can just see for days, and the sky is pretty blue most of the year. We also have these things called broghorns. They look like antelopes, and they're the fastest land animals in the Western Hemisphere, second only to the cheetahs, which is pretty cool. Yeah. But there's so much going on here in Wyoming. Not very many people. It's the least populated state here in the U.S., but if you love outdoors, you would love Wyoming.
What about those, as you call them, fluffy cows?
Yeah.
I saw a lady on a video try to get a little too close to one recently. It didn't go so well.
I think that's a yearly occurrence where they have to constantly remind the tourists that bison don't like to be pet. Like, they will gore you. And don't pet them. But they usually call them the fluffy cows, which is pretty fun. But they have a farm here in Cheyenne that has a herd of bison. So we got to take the kids there.
So beyond public health, we have a public service message here, which is don't pet the fluffy cows.
Yeah, please don't.
What's the craziest thing you've ever done for science, Robert?
Oh, yeah. So I mentioned I was kind of in ecology in my undergrad. I was doing field ecology, and we were capturing armadillos. And so we would capture them, tag them, and we were trying to determine whether they were. So armadillos would go into gopher tortoises' burrows, which house their keystone species, the gopher tortoises, and they basically can home like a lot of different animals inside their burrows. And so these armadillos would kind of kick out the gopher tortoises. And so we would catch them, but where we were catching them was a military base. And this military base did shooting training, pilot training, where they would actually do live ammunition training. So on one side we had a shooting range. And so if you heard gunfire, you know it was coming from that direction. Just try to avoid this area. We did have one time where we showed up and they were like, the pilots are doing testing. They're testing bombs right now, so you can't go over there. If you see any bombs that may not have detonated, stay away. And then there was another section, and we were doing this all at night. So it's just like even better. And there's another section. If you went past a certain line, you would basically get armed troops come at you and be like, what are you doing?
Sounds dangerous.
Yeah.
The armadillos, though, they're armored and they can go in holes. So they're a little safer than you out there.
They were a pain to catch.
How do you catch them?
A pole with a big net. And kind of like something you would clean a pool with, except it has a net at the end. And they're so small and they get into the shrubs. So it was very hard to kind of catch them. But it was fun, but also like, I don't know if I would do that one again.
So outside of bioinformatics, Robert, what hobbies do you have?
Woodworking. Lots of like small furniture type building, or just, helping my sister-in-law build shelves in her house and all that, like pantry, closets. I did have a fun one where I got to finish a basement from framing to insulation, drywall, and paint and all that. I'm not a fan of drywall. It's a messy mess let the professionals handle that one. I won't touch power or plumbing. Last thing I want to do is get shocked or have a flood in the house. So, gotcha. But yeah, sometimes small electronics too. So kids always break things. So sometimes you got to pull out the solder and iron to, try and fix some of that stuff. But yeah, mostly woodworking and small electronics.
Perfect. So we'll do these ones real quick. What's your most recent video game played?
Horizon Zero Dawn, I think. You're a post-apocalyptic world, and you're fighting machines with bow and arrows. It's a fun game. I'd definitely give it a shot.
Most recent movie watched?
With the kids, we watch Minions, Rise of Gru. I love all the Despicable Me's and Minions. it's awesome. And one, Day Shift, Vampire Hunters, that with Jamie Foxx and Snoop Dogg. It was pretty epic. It's a really fun one.
Is there anything that's not good with a Snoop Dogg in it?
I know. And he's a vampire hunter.
That's awesome. TV show watched?
This one called Ghost. This lady inherits a house that is it's haunted by a bunch of ghosts, but it is absolutely hilarious. Definitely, if you want a quick 20-minute laugh, give that one a shot.
Is it a true story?
Wouldn't surprise me.
So, Robert, at the summit, we got to see a good selection of shirts, and anybody that knows you always have a pretty effervescent shirt on. So, what's your favorite of the bunch?
Honestly, I think my favorite is the flamingo skateboarding, the one that I wore at the little talk I gave at the summit. This one, the rubber duckies, is kind of the favorites among all the meetings I've been in. I think with that whole, you know, rubber duckies and program, it makes total sense. Cause, yeah.
I like them both. I did request the rubber duck shirt for this podcast. So I'm glad you brought it along. Last question before we wrap. The World Cup's in progress. Do you call it soccer or do you call it football?
It is, gosh, if we could manage to put together, I will tell you, soccer has grown over, like when I was a kid, like there was no playing soccer. But now like my kids can play soccer, but it is football. I think it should be football. And, I do love the A can versus football memes, comparing the American football to actually like throwing a ball that's shaped like an egg with your hand. So I do love those memes. So definitely football.
I was just reading during the World Cup here that the term soccer actually came from the UK, where obviously they're pretty averse to using the term soccer. So it's interesting that it actually started there. But you could look that up separately. We don't need, or maybe we can post the link for that little trivia bit somewhere here on the bottom of the screen. But Robert, it was really awesome to chat with you. I really enjoyed it. I was looking forward to this one, and we'll do it again soon.
Yeah, I'm anxious for the next summit so I can see you all in person again.
Yeah, we are too. It's nice to be able to do these in person meetings, and the summit was fantastic, and it'll probably be double or triple the size next time.
Oh man, that's exciting. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you, Robert. Great to see you. Take care.
Bye.